This is the best of the Adam Gold Show podcast, part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network, brought to you by Capital Financial Advisory Group. Get your total retirement income plan by texting Adam to 21000.
All right, let's talk.
Enjoy the best of today's show. Here's Adam Gold.
Get right to it. Chris Paul, first ever NBA Finals, one of the greatest to ever play the point guard position in the NBA, dragged the Phoenix Suns to a 130-103 win over the LA Clippers in Los Angeles. And for the first time ever in his career, Paul is headed to the NBA Finals. You know what you get? You get clothes. You get clothing when you go to the NBA Finals. You probably get clothing. Well, you definitely get clothing if you win it, but at least Chris Paul's getting a T-shirt and a hat.
It's been a lot, telling you. Told you I was getting an MRI yesterday on my wrist. Then had all these surgeries over the years. Tone, equipment guy in Houston. I remember we was up 3-2. And I didn't get to play those last two games in Houston. And Tone had the T-shirt and the hat. You know what I mean? I never got a chance to get it. Like, I never forget that. Never forget that. And Jay, our trainer here, equipment guy here, Jay texted me a couple days ago and said, see, I got the T-shirt and the hat. You know what I mean? All you got to do is do your part. So that's the only thing that I was thinking about, you know what I mean, is the process. This is just getting us one step closer to where we want to be.
Yep. He got the T-shirt and the hat. First of maybe two T-shirts and hats for Chris Paul, again, one of the best point guards ever. Key moment in the game, and we're going to get you a play-by-play highlight from the radio broadcast here in just a second because you have to hear it. Key moment in the game, Suns in full meltdown mode. The throes of coughing up a 17-point lead. Here's what happens, right? And this is routine for older players. They do it with LeBron. They do it with all players like this. You get to a point in the third quarter. They had opened up. It wasn't quite 17 at this point. It was like 13 points. And Paul comes out late in the third. You give the guy a little bit of a rest into the end of the period. And then maybe a couple of minutes into the fourth. And then he comes on and plays out the rest of the game. Well, when Paul left the court, things started going south for the Suns. The Clippers went on a 10-0 run. It became a 7-point game. Chris Paul comes back, comes out of the phone booth, and boom. Three-pointer, two-pointer, three-pointer. Dominance restored. Mark Jones on the radio.
Ball with the basketball out near midcourt. Going to wind it down. Six on the shot clock. Staring down Morris Sr. Through his legs. Pulls up for three. Oh, stop it! CP3 hotter than fish grease. Looking at the sellout crowd here at Staples Center, ready to pop his collar and say, how do you like me now?
All of that was awesome.
What?
All of that was awesome.
Fish grease?
Hotter than fish grease. Fish grease is hot,
it
man.
Is.
Fish grease is hot.
Is fish grease hot?
Yes. Are you going to challenge Mark Jones on that? Come on. Like, that was awesome.
Fried fish grease? Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah, of course. Of course, that's true.
CP3 hotter than fish grease.
Okay. I have never heard that one before.
I am such a huge Mark Jones fan.
That is
fan.
Amazing.
I love Mark Jones.
Hotter than fish grease.
Hotter than fish grease, exactly. Look, we got the full CP3 show in effect yesterday. We had all of it. We had 41 points. He was 7 of 8 from three-point range. He was everything the Phoenix Suns needed last night to drag them across the finish line. They've only got really one guy on the club other than Paul. Actually, I shouldn't say other than Paul because he hadn't been that far. Jay Crowder is the only other guy that has some winning pedigree. Everybody else is either too young to know what's going on or hasn't really won among their, top crew. Either way, they needed Chris Paul to be that guy. But we also saw the Chris Paul flop in effect with DeMarcus Cousins. Then Patrick Beverley got ejected for shoving Paul in the back, and Paul flopped. Didn't flop on that, but he laid on the ground as though he was broken. John Curry is the director of athletics at Wake Forest, and he joins us on the Adam Gold Show. First, I can't appreciate enough how much you giving your time to us today, because I know there are a lot more important things on your plate than talking to a dopey radio host. So I appreciate your time.
Adam, I'm honored to be with you. You're not a dopey radio host. We appreciate your partnership and helping tell some student-athlete stories. You know, normally this time of year, you'd have me on your show, and I would immediately be talking about how many starters Coach Clawson has coming back and the fact that we've got the best football program in the ACC in the 21st century in the state of North Carolina, 44-20 against our ACC North Carolina rivals this century. But I know today you want to talk about some of the other stuff.
Yeah, look, there's a lot of good things about Wake Forest football. I thought you were going to filibuster there for a second just to bring up a congressional term. But that's good. So overall thoughts as we're here today on what name, image, and likeness rights to athletes, what does it mean to Wake Forest? What does it mean to college athletics?
Well, ultimately, there's a lot of really positive things, and we applaud the progress that's been made in expanding access to name, image, and likeness rights. I was just on a Zoom call with about 30 of our student athlete leaders, and they have lots of questions, and we're all learning about how some of these things will apply as they go along. And there's some great things, and there's also some risks associated with it in terms of potential threats long term to the volume of opportunities we've been able to offer for student athletes.
John Curry, Wake Forest Athletic Director, is joining us. So two questions jumped out at me immediately based on what you just said. So what are some of the questions the athletes had for you?
They had awesome questions. We're lucky at Wake Forest. We have very smart student mm-hmm. athletes. This is a top 30 university, 15,000 people apply to go to school here this year. Our athletes are among the ones that were able to be here. Some of them are asking about the effect on international students. So you may have an international student athlete. We have one who has a gazillion TikTok or Twitter followers or whatever. And, international student athletes are on student visas. And there's some very specific things that people can and can't do if they're on student visas. So we have to make sure that our international student athletes are considering how those NIL type opportunities might affect their visa status. So that would be one particular type question. Then there's also questions about representation, and there's mm-hmm. questions about it's really been an eye opener, I think, for a lot of student athletes. It's very positive that. We want students to learn while they're in college, learn things that will help them be more successful when they get out in the post-college world. And so learning about taxation and, insurance, if you're like giving lessons or running your own camp, you have to have insurance and things like that. So I think there's a great learning platform in front of us.
How important is it? And I mean, without knowing for a fact, if it's even allowable, but how important is it for these athletes to have representation to guide them through this period?
Well, it will be allowed that student athletes can have representation, or we anticipate it would be, I should say, because all this stuff is changing pretty quick, that they have representation for purposes of business ventures, just like anybody else can mm-hmm. have representation for a business venture. There are some limitations. But we also, as you and I both know, when you go into some kind of deal, you do want to make sure that you understand all the workings of it. And so having access to an expert might be helpful in that regard. At the same time, you hear stories through the years about people being taken advantage of because they didn't get the right information. And certainly that happens in a lot of areas of society. That's not just in athletics.
There's no question. That happens in pro sports. We have a former Hurricanes draft pick who ended up playing elsewhere, Jack Johnson, a defenseman, got taken by his own parents. So, yes, having the right representation is important. This question just popped into my head, and I am curious how this will work. in the past, a player, like let's just say an international basketball recruit who maybe came up through a club organization, let's just, for regardless of whether or not this has happened locally or not, but somebody who played with the developmental program at Real Madrid, if he came over and accepted an athletic scholarship, sometimes because you were in a pro system, you would then be subject to like sitting out a period of time. Would we be eliminating something like that?
Well, keep in mind that what has been liberalized in the last 24 hours is not pay for play. This is not pay for
right.
play, and it is not supposed to be recruiting inducements. The somewhat arcane and often very complex and oftentimes culturally impractical rules that govern international student athlete eligibility, even in sports like tennis or golf or whatever, those things have been simplified quite a bit over the last 5 to 10 years. I can remember, this is my 12th year as a Power 5 AD and 28th year in athletics, and I can remember many examples of just what you're talking about, you know, incredibly convoluted processes to get a player from Serbia in some sport who had been on the, the local, the Belgrade All-Stars or whatever, trying to have them pay back money and figure that out, what they got when they were 14. And a lot of that stuff's been simplified already.
John Curry, athletic director at Wake Forest, is joining us here on the Adam Gold Show. Should this have been handled differently or better at the top rung of the college sports ladder?
It's so complex because you're dealing, as we talk about the top rung of the college sports ladder, one has to remember that the college sports ladder is a really, really long ladder. And, you know, you're talking about 1,000 schools, you're talking about 350 Division I schools, you're talking about 130 FBS schools, you know, bowl schools like the seven in the state of North Carolina with the Big Four, and then Appalachian, UNC Charlotte, and East Carolina. And then you're talking about 65 Power 5 schools. So you're just talking about a dramatically wide group of institutions trying to come up with rules together. And what is the real challenge in college athletics is that when you establish a limit because you're trying to have competitive equity, to some, you've established a anti-competitive limit, even if our limit is intended to be pro-competitive. And so we got to this point right now because we are just we're so fractured, really across the country with different perspectives that it's very difficult to come up with consensus. You know, ultimately you've seen a number of different state laws passed on these particular subjects. Some of the state laws there's state laws for 15 ACCs for some of the states in the ACC with our 15 member institutions, which are directly conflict with what Institution A student athletes can do and Institution B student athletes can do because they're in two different states. And so ultimately, I believe that we have to have to protect and sustain college athletics and the opportunities that have been provided for all. There's going to need to be some federal legislation, and the Commerce Committee, both Republicans and Democrats, have had dialogue about that. And I'm hopeful that sooner or later there will be some kind of standard that simplifies things for the students.
If it has to be bipartisan, I don't know if we're going to have one of those. John Curry.
Well, I would say that I have to admit that the association of which I am a member, and we are all members, you know, we've been able to unite the far left and the far right against the NCAA. So it's very, very rare that you can unite some people. Hopefully we can unite all sides of the political spectrum to the benefit of student athletes and sustaining the opportunities, the enormous opportunities that have come through the athletic scholarship model over the last, the last 75 years.
I will say this, and this needs no response from you, and I'm sure you don't even want to respond. It took the NCAA to get a 9-0 final from the Supreme Court. In terms of fears, unintended negative consequences, what are you thinking? What are you worried about as a result of NIL being law of the land?
Well, let me tell you something that's positive first. Okay, so
sure.
So Emilio Malaccio from right there in Cary, North Carolina, who has been a superlative golfer, All-American at Wake Forest, and was the runner-up in the Augusta Women's National Amateur this year. Amelia wrote a novel a couple years ago. She wrote a novel, and under the policy of the NCAA, until 5 o'clock yesterday, she would not have been able to profit from the sale of her novel, right?
Mm-hmm.
As of today, she can now profit from the sale of her novel, and I encourage you to go buy a copy. however, there are some elements of the how we fund college athletics for all these different people. You know, we got $3.5 billion in athletic scholarships this year across the country. That's a tremendous amount. There's like 185,000 young people on athletic scholarships this year. How we fund that is that we might go out and market rights to a company, whether it's a bank or a shoe apparel company or whatever, as an aggregate, almost like a group. And then we earn that money. And that's how we help pay for all these uniforms and shoes for all of our student athletes and all the different sports, et cetera, facilities. Right. And so if you have a company that decides that instead of giving University X, instead of investing $1 million a year in the licensing rights for University X, you know, a sponsorship, those signs you see at different games or whatever, you know, a big bank or a shoe company or whatever, if that company decides instead of giving or investing $2 million in the rights to that school, and by definition, all the student athletes in that school, that company may decide that it's, you know what, it's a lot more effective for us just to, you know, give $10,000 to the best golfer and the best quarterback and the point guard and the starting goalie on the women's soccer team. And you know what, we're going to have just as much publicity because those are the stars. And it's a lot better business deal to invest $40,000 than it is to invest $2 million in this deal. And so all of a sudden, those four athletes might have got that $10,000, but you just lost the $2 million that was helping fund all of these programs. Mm-hmm. So we certainly hope that the pie grows, but for companies that are investing and really helping sustain, and individuals are helping sustain college athletics and all these opportunities that are offered, there is a possibility that there's not a new marketing budget that comes along at XYZ Corporation. We're just going to take money out of the existing budget and redistribute it. So that's one of the real challenges I believe that people are concerned about. We may have the impression, you know, that the universities are making, you know, gazillions of dollars, but the reality of it is out of those 351 Division I schools, there's about 20 that have a surplus, and the rest of us are investing significant non-athletics revenue into our programs to be able to sponsor a comprehensive athletics program with lots of opportunities.
I know we only have a couple of minutes here, and I probably have kept you longer than you wanted to be kept, but my only counter to what the scenario you were pointing out is that a place like Wake Forest, a national prominent university, the association from that company, which provided uniforms and other things for, you know, at the arbitrary cost of $2 million, to me, the association with the university is as or more important as the association with that specific athlete. So I hope what will happen, I mean, we don't know because we haven't experienced it yet, but what I hope would happen is that would be additional money, or if something is siphoned off, it would just be a small amount. So let me ask you this as we let you go. And this is sort of a little bit of a joke, but it's only sort of serious now because you brought her name up. Could we pay Emilio Malaccio to endorse our show?
The new NCAA rules, which basically are no rules. It basically right. opens it up.
Right.
You would be. Yes, you could. You could hire Amelia or another student athlete to be a spokesperson or a social influencer
sure.
For your show.
Alex,
some parameters and okay. et cetera. But and Amelia's also she would be an extraordinary representative of your show, I should say.
Yeah,
I just got into the gray area because I, as a university, am not supposed to be engaged with actively developing such opportunities.
Okay. That's fair.
I may have committed the first violation of the NIL era right there.
I'm so sorry if that's the if that's the case. I don't definitely. I will defend you to all ends. Alec needs help with his putting. I know she was the one. We watched her during the Augusta National. She was dynamite, and her mom was caddying for her.
You could hire a student athlete to give lessons, just as my 18-year-old high school daughter is giving somebody lessons in field hockey this week. So now there will be some things that student athletes heretofore could not do just because they were student athletes that they will be able to do. And that is a good thing. We just want to make sure that we can sustain the broader enterprise in the process.
All right. I appreciate your time, John Curry. I hope I didn't get you in trouble. I really do. You've been good. You've been good to us. I appreciate everything. And anytime you want to come back, we're here for you.
Always, and I appreciate everything y'all are doing to tell the great stories of college athletics in our state.
Tom Dundon is no longer the majority owner. He's just the owner of the Carolina Hurricanes. And he joins us on the Adam Gold Show. Am I to congratulate you? What's appropriate?
No, I'm not sure. Good to be with you. Nothing's really changed for me, so.
I know. Let's first of all, what did this process entail for you in terms of decision making? And finances, I know, wasn't an issue, but why did it take 3.5 years?
Just the way we structured the deal up front. I'm sure there were a lot of reasons at the time, but I want to make sure I liked it. Make sure, I think you remember, it's not like team probably wasn't where they wanted to be at the time. And I wasn't 100% sure how it would go. Right. I just wanted to make sure I wanted to give myself some ability to change my mind if this wasn't going the way I expected it to go.
I think I remember the first home game after the purchase became final and public, and it was a devastating home loss to the Washington Capitals. Did you believe then that, you know what, I should just sell this back to Peter right now?
Every time we lose, I think about it. I hate it. Yeah, I can't take it.
How have you dealt with the last, say, month?
No, it's no good, right? I don't know. I don't know how to dump it. I'm trying to figure it out. It's what's good is everybody around here is the same, so it's you kind of shared misery in that sense. Mm-hmm. The losing hurts everybody, and when there's 32 teams you're playing against, or 31 this year, but 32 going forward, that you're not going to win every year. But I'm trying to get comfortable with the fact that we're good enough to win, and that we're going to be in the conversation, and then trying to get comfortable with the fact that we could have won, and you just got to keep at it.
Tom Dundon is here, owner of the Carolina Hurricanes. Has this fan base surprised you for its loyalty, its passion, its knowledge? Has it caught you by surprise a little bit?
I don't know if it was a surprise, because everybody told me if we won that there'd be fans, but it'd been a while. And so that was part of the way I structured this. I wanted to see it, that if we started to win, that you'd get the support we've gotten. So yeah, I don't know, I was surprised because I was told to expect it, but it's definitely nice that what I was told is true, and maybe you're right. Maybe it's even better than what I would have expected, but it's definitely, there's no team without fans, right? I mean, mm-hmm. The first time I met with the players, one of my message was, look, we're not here if they don't enjoy this, if they don't feel part of it, and you're going to have to do more, right? Whether it's things on social media or signing autographs or being available. And that's just part of the deal. And everyone, obviously they've done it, and I've really appreciated the fact that our players have embraced it, and the fans have returned the favor, and more and even better than that.
We're going to talk about the outdoor game in a second, but I'm curious as to you. You currently live in Dallas, and it's a pro town, and I'm from New York, and it's a pro town, and Raleigh, North Carolina is a college town. Does it combine the best of both worlds for the Hurricanes?
Yeah, I mean, look, when we're doing well and winning and there's a bunch of people in there, it's fun for everybody, right? Players like it. I like it. Fans enjoy it. So I don't know enough about pro, college, or whatever. I just know that, you know, it seems like enough people care about the team in Raleigh. So that's all that matters.
All right, let's get to the outdoor game. And there was, I think, you know, the people I speak with in the Raleigh sports and entertainment industry and around town, there was never a question that an outdoor game would sell out. Never a question at all. I got the fastest response possible from all the people I consulted. But there were fears that based on, well, I'll let you explain why essentially you allowed the NHL, because it was already announced that it was going to be this past February. So you explain why you allowed the NHL to maybe delay it by a year.
Well, it's not, I don't know if it's allowed, they're in charge. They make the decision. I was open to the fact that, you know, for the last year, when you're talking about, do you cancel it, what's going to happen? And then when do you reschedule it? You know, if you think about 60 days ago, we didn't have fans, right? Or some number of days ago. So the idea of not knowing how this thing is going to go and then getting everybody's hopes up again, and then maybe having to not have the event we want or have spacing, or I didn't know. So for me, it was, NHL, I don't know what you're doing or what the plans are, but I'm open to, it doesn't have to be next year for us. You know, if it were the following year where we had more time between COVID and the game, that would seem to be something that might make sense. Now, it's easy today when you see sold out arenas to say, well, why'd you do that? Or wish you had it this next year, but I'm pretty happy with the way it turned out. You know, I would have been fine if they kept it, just delayed it a year. But I think waiting one more year will have a lot less anxiety about, well, what if there's a new variant or a way? Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't get to decide how many people come to that building. So for me, waiting a year to where that variable was more likely to be taken away made sense. That's all it was.
And the truth is that I know we have seen full buildings in some places. We saw it in Vegas. I think we've been seeing it in the state of Texas. But the Tampa Bay Lightning in a state, Florida, which is basically, you know, from day one, whether it doesn't make a difference what position you have on this, day one, Florida has basically put up a middle finger to the virus. They still didn't have full capacity at Amalie Arena. They had 17,000 in there for a building that could seat upwards of 21. Right. Montreal still not. I mean, they're stuck at 3,500. I kind of feel bad for them in Game 3 of the Stanley Cup Finals.
Yeah, I agree. Look, waiting an extra year, if you're rational about it, is okay, right? So I can't even believe it's a story. I actually think it's like, anyway. It is what it is. I'm happy. I'm happy with the way it turned out. And, you know, if we would have been doing it this year, I would have just been hoping it worked. And, you know, waiting the extra year, I'm way more confident we're not going to have to deal with any restrictions.
No, I agree, 100% agree with that. Can I throw a couple of more things at you, and you can pass or you can address? It's America. You can do what you want. First of all, we're all glad that Rod Brind'Amour is secured for another 3 years. What took so long?
I don't even know if it took that long. I just think, you know, Rod's pretty focused on the game and the mm-hmm. team. And I think it was just like getting him to just to have to just settle down and think about himself versus think about everybody else. Probably maybe what took so long, but you know him. So and you know me off the air. This was never a problem, you know? So I'm glad it generated some cycles and kept us in the news, but he and I were always going to work this out. So I don't know what took so long.
It didn't generate any cycles here, but I'm sure you at least peruse, but I listen to a lot of NHL radio on satellite. I was stunned and angry at how many minutes they took up talking about Rod Brindamore could go here, Rod Brindamore could go there. I finally had to reach out to somebody I know and said, the silliness has to stop. He's not leaving. And Rod, because Rod said that, 2 months ago? He's like, I'm a Hurricane. He's like, not going anywhere.
I don't know. They can do it. If I worried about what they said, life would be hard. I've never worried about them, whoever them are.
I'm sure that's true. Dougie Hamilton, what are your thoughts? I mean, I know the team has given him the opportunity to test the market. Your thoughts on the potential of bringing number 19 back?
You know, we're in it with him. He knows we want him back. I think he'd like to come back, and then it's just about, you know, what's the market versus what we can fit. And we won't know that probably for a couple more weeks. You know, I'd love it. I'd love to do it faster. And if he wanted to do it faster, we would try. But, you know, he's earned this right after how many years in the league to find out what his choices are. And I still hope we're going to be the best choice for him.
Is it more about dollars or years?
I don't know what it is exactly. I don't think we're at a point where we know if there even is a problem, right? Till you kind of know what other people think versus what we think. So, I mean, it's always both, but I couldn't pinpoint one.
All right, let me ask you two other things, and then we'll let you go. You have been a proponent of expanded playoffs. If I'm not mistaken, over the old system using divisions and wild cards, the Montreal Canadiens would not have made the playoffs. Does this bolster or hurt the argument for expansion in your eyes?
I don't know. You know, look, that's the point, right, with hockey is anybody can beat anybody. It makes it fun. It also makes it frustrating when you have a really good team. Because you'd like it to be more like basketball where the better team when healthy wins.
Mm-hmm.
When you're good and when you're bad, you like the fact that you can get some breaks. I always looked at it like if they expanded the playoffs, they'd make it a lot harder for 7, 8, 9, and 10, be a harder road. So I always looked at it as if we ever expanded the playoffs, you'd actually give more of an advantage to the top seeds. So it was a combination of expanded playoffs plus increasing the odds for the people who did better in the regular season. So maybe it bolsters the odds, right? Because they got in and they did good, but they had the exact same chance as a team who through 82 games was better. So I'd like to see some combination. NBA kind of does that, right? They make it a little tougher to come from the bottom. That's interesting to me.
Do you think Gary Bettman is open to that or no?
I think he said no, and I haven't talked to him about it. He knows my position, and that vote's worth not much, I think. And so I just don't spend my time thinking about this anymore. Plus, you know, it better not matter to us for a while.
I don't know, man. The Metropolitan Division is going to be an absolute minefield next year. Final thing for Tom Dundon, no longer majority owner, just the owner of the Carolina Hurricanes. What's the next big thing for you? Is it the arena? Is that the next big thing?
Yeah, I mean, well, for the next couple months, it's how do we get a little better?
Right.
And then, yeah, the arena is huge focus, right? We are 100% focused on how do we renovate and develop around this arena and make this something, you know, make it a destination and make it appropriate for, you know, what we have here in the city. So, you know, I'm hoping that starts to gain some traction now that the world's starting to get back to normal and think about the future.
I hope if there's anything I can do to help, let me know, because I'm here for what's good for the Hurricanes as well. So I appreciate your time. Congratulations again. I'm not even sure congratulations are in order, but congratulations for it.
Thanks, bud. Have a good show.
You've been listening to the best of the Adam Gold Show podcast. Part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network, brought to you by Capital Financial Advisory Group. Get your total retirement income plan by texting Adam to 21000. Don't forget, this podcast drops every weekday at 3 p.m. Or you can find it at WRALSportsFan.com, the WRAL Sports Fan app, or you can subscribe for free at the iTunes and Google Play stores.